Welcome everyone to 360 View with Dr. Marie Asher-Baptiste. I am so super excited today to be on 360 podcast with you all, where we talk about issues that matters in our society, such as religion, politics, economy, struggles of life, immigration, legality, and so forth. So on today is a very, very special podcast because we want to talk about what is happening right now with our global economy. And for this focus of this show, we have with us our very own Dr. Brian Lent, who is the representative for Schiller Institute, and also have over 35 years of Intelligent Review magazine, as well as a researcher and a writer for Science and Economy. So I am super excited to have him with us today to talk about the impact of a global economy now and after. Welcome, Dr. Lent, to our podcast.
Good to be with you. Good to be with you. Good to be with you again, Dr. Marie Baptiste.
Awesome. So moving forward, we're going to go right into what we're going to discuss. So I'm going to give a broad introduction about what our economy is and what is the greatest power right now. And then we're going to give the floor to you to give your opinion on the question that's going to be posed. So in light of all that's happening, we know that the United States of America is the world's largest economy with a nominal GDP of $21.44 trillion, which is constituted one-fourth of the world. Then we have China has the second largest economy in the world and the fastest growing trillion-dollar economy with a GDP of $14.14 trillion. Then we have our third, you know, Japan, largest economy in the world, which is $14.1 trillion. Then we move right on into Germany, which is $3.6 trillion in the world and the largest economy in Europe. So, and then we have our fifth economy, which is India, that is at a $2.94 trillion. So in all of that we're looking at, we see those are the greater global economy, you know, movers and shakers for the world. In light of all of this, we see that we are facing with this pandemic. And with this pandemic, we see that there is going to be some tremendous impact in our global economy. And how do we say that? Is that during the 2008 and 2009 financial crisis, the stock market, the global trade, and the economy growth all fell by a great margin than in the same period of the Great Depression of 1929 to 1933. So in terms of the global economy, knowing all these factors, are we in a global economy collapse, or are we going to a global economic collapse, Dr. Lent?
Well, I think, thank you. And thank you for creating some context. Of course, those are all numbers, as you know, just numbers.
Yes.
I think this is a point where humanity has to step forward and supplant the bean counting. One good indication of the possibilities, an indication, a signal, is that the UNCTAD, the UN Conference on Trade and Economic Development, proposed March 30th, so it hasn't been that long ago, proposed a $3 trillion program. You may have heard about it, for the developing countries, a coronavirus package.
Yes.
Specifically saying that this shock to the world that this pandemic represents has represented already a serious economic hit to the developing countries. As you probably know, many currencies have been devalued. significantly, 15-20%, and so forth, devaluations, which means the imports are going up, you know, massively. And of course, markets are shrinking and so forth. So they proposed $3 trillion, $1 trillion in special drawing rights, $1 trillion in loans, and so forth, and $500 billion for healthcare, basically, for healthcare recovery. But these numbers are tiny. To put things in context, the United States currently has 2.8 beds per 1,000 people. I said to get away from bean counting. I'm not trying to drown people in numbers here. So, but to give an idea, we 2.8, and Haiti, for example, is somewhere around one. The figures that I know of are several years old, but that was 0.7 beds per 1,000. Mm-hmm. And you know how much we are struggling here,
yes,
to provide the beds. And of course, the beds are just a way of also counting nurses and doctors and other healthcare workers that are required. We once had a standard in the United States of 4.5 beds per 1,000. That was the Hill-Burton standards put in place after World War II. So our healthcare has contracted, our healthcare facilities, the number of doctors and nurses in our population has contracted. We're lucky here in Houston to be here with the Houston Medical Center, of course. But that gives you some idea. Nigeria's number of beds is 0.5 per 1,000. They've got 500 ventilators for the whole country, you know, for a country of 200 million people. So the point is that $2.5, $3 trillion that the UNCTAD organization is proposing is larger than anything that anybody has proposed coming out of an official agency like that. But what's required is a much more expansive effort, which would require the United States and China working together. You mentioned those two countries as the leading countries. And as you know, the Schiller Institute has proposed a four-power summit. I would call it four powers and friends.
Correct.
Four powers being Russia, China, the United States, and India, as the four leading actual powers in the world. And with friends such as Japan and so forth, coming together in a summit, because what we have to undertake now is a reorganization of the financial system to actually drive massive expansion of productivity and wealth creation in the world. And this would involve immediately a massive investment on the order of 10 trillion. I'm just using this as a round figure, at least on the range of 10, $15 trillion into the developing countries for healthcare.
Correct.
Immediate requirement. We're beginning to get a handle on COVID-19 here in the United States. It's still going to be a rough ride here for a few weeks, at least, but we're getting a handle on it. But in terms of the Southern Hemisphere, this is where the virus is going to be going. As it kind of dies off for the season here, just like the flu season dies off, it'll move into the Southern Hemisphere. And you already have in Africa, for example, 16 areas of outbreak of the virus, and they don't have the sanitation, the healthcare, all that's required. And of course, the population is living on an average per capita standard of living much lower than ours. So they're subject, much more subject to infection and morbidity. So this is our proposal that we've put on the table immediately. And as you may know, that there is a summit that's being planned now. That since Helga Zep-LaRouche, our chairwoman, made the specific proposal on healthcare, a summit between the four powers Well, it's actually a slightly different form, but it's in the form of a UN, the Security Council, permanent members of the UN Security Council are supposed to meet to discuss national security. And it's agreed now that the COVID virus has to be part of that discussion. So that could be one format in which this process moves forward very quickly. But just as we've seen a mobilization in the United States, you know, to produce masks and ventilators and ramp up new hospitals, field hospitals, and so on, we now have to carry forward that same effort and engage in the kind of technology transfer of resources into the Southern Hemisphere to head off, you know, what otherwise would well be a Holocaust in the Southern Hemisphere. I fear that. So let me stop there. I don't want to just keep talking one way here. I'm interested in your thoughts as well. It's good to have a dialogue here.
No, I'm really agree with you that the full power need to collaborate together so that we make sure we can, you know, work integral instead of working, you know, separately, because I believe in a situation such as this, we really need to come together, you know, into one force, one, you know, greater power to combat this pandemic, because this pandemic is not only going to interrupt and disrupt, you know, just America, but it's going to interrupt and disrupt the whole global economy. Mm-hmm. And so while we have the standpoint, it is the time, even though that it's never too late to start, but we need to begin to start now to put the pieces and implement certain infrastructure that will come back to destroy this pandemic and then prepare ourselves for a better and a greater economy.
Yes, yes. I think so one thing, our point is that we're really dealing with three viruses. We're dealing with COVID-19, you know, the coronavirus. We're dealing also with the financial virus, you know, that's prevented the economic development of much of the world, really going since World War II, really. And thirdly, we're looking at a third virus, which is the virus of cultural pessimism, that everyone for themselves, me, and so when that dominates in a society, of course, then one's not thinking about the future or planning for the future or thinking about the future for one's children and grandchildren. And I think one of the things that that you've seen come forward is that in this crisis, you've had a coming together of people. I think we're all quite proud of our healthcare workers, our nurses, our doctors, the efforts that they're making. There's been a tremendous mobilization of resources. Our grocery clerks, you know, the truck drivers, the people have put themselves on the line in this situation. As well, there's been a kind of breakout. The president of the United States has had to say, basically, hey, we can create, you know, the financial instruments here to finance whatever we need. We're gonna put trillions of dollars into keeping into checks going to people's homes to make sure that they can support their families. We're going to make checks available through small businesses. We're going to help out our farmers. We're going to, and the list goes on. And as you know, they passed an initial bill of $2+ trillion. And then another package was put together, which totals somewhere over $3.5 trillion. And they're talking about phase four. Much of this, not all of it, but much of it is directed to Main Street as opposed to Wall Street. You know, it's a top-down decision to really reshape the economy, reshape the direction under conditions of the crisis, what's necessary here in this crisis. I think that, you know, the talk, you know, President Trump has talked about the fact that we're now producing so many ventilators for ICU units that we can begin exporting them. We'll soon begin exporting them, either selling them or giving them away. And we can do the same with other healthcare provisions. And China and Russia have sent cargo planes of healthcare goods to the United States very openly and publicly. So there's an element of international cooperation that's occurring here, which now, of course, just naturally extends itself to the developing countries. So we're beginning to deal with this COVID virus by dealing with the long-term financial virus that we've had, which again is threatening to blow things out. As you know, the stock market was collapsing. Everyone was saying, how are these airlines going to stay afloat and so forth. We're starting to deal with that top down, the way Franklin Roosevelt would deal with it. We're not there yet. You can see that element in the picture. And you can see, thirdly, you can see this renewed optimism in the American people.
Correct.
As this, disease is taken on.
Correct.
I'm just trying to identify, there's an element of voluntarism here, of freedom, you know, of people acting to change history as opposed to just being swept along with it.
Exactly. And then I totally agree with you. In light of all of this that's happening, we can also say that we are having a new infrastructure or a new paradigm shift to where that we have a new world health system. What is your opinion? Do you believe that in this pandemic situation, we will inherit it or implement an integral world health system that will, you know, commoderate and collaborate together to combat different diseases and different viruses from taking over our global society?
Well, I think, first of all, and I appreciate your efforts in this regard, Dr. Baptiste. It is you. Up to us.
Yes.
You know, we have to be the thinkers and movers and shakers in this process. If we sit in the stadium in the bleachers just watching this like it's a football game or gladiators or something, we're fools. I think in short we can move into that new paradigm. Again, here President Trump is proposing a $2 trillion infrastructure plan for the United States that as he said, all we spent, you know, $8 or $9 trillion in these wars, these endless wars in the Middle East and in Southwest Asia and Central Asia and Afghanistan, you know, devastation, horrible consequences of this. Now it's time to rebuild the United States. So you see that as a new kind of thinking, but in terms of a global health initiative, which is what our president has called for, Helga Zeplerus, the president of the Schiller Institute, you're talking about, what are the requirements? You're talking about 15 to 20 million beds to bring the world up to competent standards. Where the U.S. used to be and where some countries, for example, in Europe, Italy is 3.7 beds per thousand. But we're talking about the need for 15 to 20 million hospital beds. That means you got to not just build the beds, you got to build the hospitals. You got to train the nurses and the doctors. But that's what's required. That again means tremendous water requirements. Hospitals use a lot of water.
Correct.
And look, I, you know, we we all hear it all the time about washing your hands all the time. How can you wash your hands in Haiti or in Colombia or Kenya if you don't have clean water?
Correct.
So you're talking about something on the order of 4 trillion gallons of water, additional water, which means major water projects. You're talking about something like 100,000 gigawatts, and a big nuclear power plant is 1 gigawatt. You're talking about 100,000 gigawatts of electricity to run these hospitals. But then, of course, you're talking about, you know, you're talking about 6 billion people. You know, you're talking about two-thirds of the world population here. So,
yes,
obviously, these are this is the scale that's required. This is what the UNCTAD effort or proposal is therefore something to be, you know, to be acknowledged that is being put on the table. But now is the time to think much, much bigger. But if we think in terms of the fact that we're going to be paid back from all of this, you know, what we invest now is going to come back to mankind many times over. If we're thinking that by defeating the virus or blunting the virus further in the southern hemisphere, we will limit its effect when it comes back, it cycles back into the northern hemisphere this coming winter, that we're only helping ourselves.
Correct.
You know, if you're, to put it in more simple terms, now, if your neighbor's house is on fire, you would do well to help put it out.
Correct.
So I'm optimistic, but it is up to us.
Correct. So it's really important at this point right now. It cannot be a man for themselves. It cannot be a selfish reasoning behind it. We really have to come together as a global, you know, citizen of this world for us to say, okay, this is not an issue of my nation, but is an issue of all nations, so that we come together to combat this disease, you know, this virus once and for all, because it's not just going to stop from, you know, America and then go to Africa and then it just stop at Africa, but it's going to actually take all the 7 continents, and it requires that every engineers, scientists, doctors, every hand need to be on the plot, on docket to fight this. And so it's going to require that, you know, the community leaders, the elected officials, the global activists to really be on a campaign of combating this together. Because until we see it as an integral, you know, issue that's going to stop not just our nation, but all nation, then we defeat the purpose.
Yeah.
My God. So that brings me to a good point. For example, we're talking about, you know, how the infrastructures of the third world countries are not able to go through this virus as we are going through it because of lack of resources. Let's say, for example, Africa. Africa itself is it's the second largest, you know, nation in the world with 1.3 billion people, right?
Right. So the future of humanity. Really.
It's the future. Exactly. It's the future of humanity. So how does Africa play a part into this? How is, with this new paradigm shift, how can we as the nation of Russia, China, Germany, Japan, Asia, United States come together in this fight right now to begin to shape it? Because when we're looking at the resources, Africa has all the resources but doesn't have the manpower or the funding to actually, you know, change their global economy and their continent. So how does this play out with Africa?
Well, I would say invite everyone to visit our international website, schillerinstitute.com, And there you'll find a wealth of material readily available. And also invite participation in our national conference, which will be coming up April 25th and 26th. Because of our circumstances, all of our circumstances, this is going to be an internet conference. And so we invite all of you, all who are listening or watching, to join this conference on April 25th and 26th, that weekend. This will be an international conference with a leading expert. I'll use the word experts, but leading people, thoughtful people from Russia, from China, from Africa, from around the world. Taking part, along with the United States, of course. It's here, it's being held here in the United States. This is an organizing process that we're engaged in. We're very much, as you know, supporting the Belt and Road, the New Silk Road. And 2 years ago, a little over 2 years ago, I think it was in 2017, the new Health Silk Road was the subject of an international conference in Beijing. Dr. Tedros, from the head of the World Health Organization, many world leaders were there in terms of leaders in the health field. And there you had the promotion of a Health Silk Road as a dimension of the New Silk Road. That is, China has already initiated what the United States could initiate to once and for all put our own problems behind us, to solve our own problems, which is China is engaged in a massive export of technology and skills and science into Africa, specifically, also to the Caribbean, as you know, and elsewhere to South America, but particularly into Africa. And so in Kenya, on the East Coast, for example, Ethiopia, on the West Coast, Angola, and Nigeria, tremendous amounts, the equivalent of billions of dollars of investment are incurring in each of the projects that encompass dams, railroads that have been completed in many cases, as in Ethiopia and Angola. And also, educational facilities, hospitals, and manufacturing. They're exporting manufacturing capacity into Africa. You know, once you have the electricity, once you have the water, once you have the roads, the railroads, well, then that's the context. Building those things up is how you build up the skill levels of the populations of the relevant countries. And then you can move into manufacturing proper, where you're manufacturing the goods for your own nation. You know, you're building national economic security. You're no longer at the beck and whim of others. And this is the process that China has been engaged in, having invested well over $1 trillion from the standpoint of the government, and much, much more, a multiple of that in terms of investment of companies and so forth from China. Now, that's also been joined by Japan and India on a smaller scale. And Russia has, President Putin of Russia said that Russia wants to, turn the lights on in Africa. And they're exporting nuclear power plants into Africa as a leading edge of their effort. And they're providing the credit to build those nuclear power plants. You know, they can be paid off of over decades, but they're providing the credit up front to make those projects possible. So this can be multiplied. If you think about reflecting back, the United States used to be an exporting country. We weren't dependent on everybody else for imports. We exported. Building up our own infrastructure now is a way to train a new generation of our workforce. And then as we build up that manufacturing capacity, we can throw off, we can spin off the exports simultaneous with the efforts of countries like China. And then, as I said, other countries who are coming in and playing a role as well. So it means reorganizing the financial system, creating those credits, long-term lending initiatives, if you will, to finance these large-scale projects into the developing countries. And a major part of, for example, of the UNCTAD proposal is to write off something on the order of $1 trillion worth of debt in the developing countries. Again, that's a small step, but significant. Just significant that we're once again talking about this. What we need is a debt moratoria throughout the developing world. It's all banker's arithmetic. Get that paper out of the way. Just write it off. We've got to be concerned with what we're building today and tomorrow.
Wow, that's powerful. And I totally agree with you. So this is really a collective, you know, effort and a collective opportunity to really bring the world together in a one common integral implementation for a better world for humankind.
Yes, you know, I think so. I mean, this is our opportunity, a great opportunity.
Correct. And it is. And one of the things that I read is from the director of the Nigerian director in CDC. And his exact word was like the concept of every country trying to look only within its own border is completely mind-boggling, a waste of everybody's time. We know the answers, but we don't have the infrastructure. So in light of what you just said, he already think of it, those resources is what's lacking the movement of the infrastructure to be prosperous and grow. And this is really a chance for humankind to really address everything as one, not just only themselves. Do you agree?
Yes. We've got to strain our muscles. We've got to make every effort in this direction. It's just, I said, there's nothing we can lose by doing this. There's everything to gain, I think.
Correct. And then, you know, bringing to another point is that with science and technology, you know, we can say that, for example, we know that science and technology is the way of the future. And because science and technology is really the way of the future, how do we leverage science and how do, you know, we as a human race change the course of what the economy is going to look like in the future using those leverages such as technology and science?
Science drivers, I think, is one way to think about it. Drivers. If we think of President John F. Kennedy, who is a great friend of Patrice Lumumba, among others, when he was a senator, U.S. senator, before he ever got to the White House, he was thinking in these terms. But he had in the year before he died, months before he died, actually, his last speech to the United Nations General Assembly was a proposal. This was just a year. This was 1963, a year after the Cuban Missile Crisis. He proposed that the United States and Russia join forces to launch the effort to go to the moon, that it actually be a joint project between the United States and Russia at that time. Think of the space program in terms of the transformation it made. We're here doing the Skype or Zoom broadcast. This technology was an offshoot of the space program. It wouldn't exist.
Correct.
Computers wouldn't exist maybe.
Correct.
Today.
Correct.
Launching a similar effort in terms of large-scale projects, which means a tremendous amount of problem solving and development of new materials new scientific breakthroughs along the way to make this possible, to make possible this kind of transformation of the world, is the context in which our young people can gain the skills, the insights, the optimism, starting with the optimism about what the world could be, should be, and therefore be driven to work on the frontiers of science and to make fundamental new contributions. I think one thing that we have to be conscious of is the virus of Malthusianism. Malthus, Parson Malthus, as he was called. Malthus, this idea that population grows geometrically and food can only grow arithmetically, and therefore we're going to be facing overpopulation, and there's only a certain number of ways you can solve that problem. War, pestilence, and so forth. I mean, this is the Malthus was an employee of the British East India Company. That's who he worked for. That's who he wrote for, along with Adam Smith and so forth. It was to promote this idea. Oh, if people are dying in India under the rule of the British East India Company, oh well, it's just overpopulation. It's an unfortunate consequence. Well, man is not an animal. Animal populations can overpopulate. Right. We can create. We can change the universe around us, create the circumstances for our existence in the best sense. So we have to throw off this Malthusianism, including the green form that comes in today, the greeny idea that man is just using up resources and the whole planet's going to collapse from heat death and all of this. I mean, we have to once again realize these are shackles that shackle our mind. Now we have to move beyond this. And we have plenty of great leaders to in science and so on and so forth who challenge us, by their example, and correct. We can meet that challenge.
Correct.
So I think those are elements. There's a lot there, but the getting this Malthusian mentality out of our own heads, so we're not limiting ourselves. Sure. We recognize that the potential resources are unlimited, ours as well as the universe's. And thinking of Kennedy's program as an example, and thinking in terms then of how do we rapidly upgrade the educational levels and skill levels of our young people, the young generations that are coming on and are going to be taking over. With science drivers, programs like a global health initiative to provide a global health infrastructure for mankind, this is a perfect project alongside of a new global space program effort, cooperative space program effort. I hope that helps.
It really does. So, and what you're saying, you bring a good point. It's just letting us know at this point we have a moral responsibility and a moral obligation as global citizen of this great nations, not just our own nation. We got to think globally to begin to have leaders and one become accountable to forage our minds, to have everyone on a campaign of belief that yes, things are happening, but because we are thinkers and there is science and technology, we can change the pattern or the circumstances of what's getting ready to happen. We cannot, it won't just happen to us, but we must be proactive to change things.
Yes, yes. Congressmen are available these days. They're not, people don't think about it. You may not think of going into their offices right now, but their offices are open. You could reach them by the phone. Mayors, ministers, city councilmen. These are all people who aspire to a certain kind of leadership. So let's pose to them the real challenge that's before all of us, and we're asking for them to collaborate with us. And of course, if they won't do it, you know, find somebody else. But the point is, we can really create a environment. We know this as the Schiller Institute. We've been working on this. There's people are hungry for to build a better world, and they've just been wondering how to do it. And ironically, COVID-19 can have a silver lining.
Correct.
We're suddenly kind of thrown out of passivity and thrown into action.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. I totally agree with you. And one thing we can say, and it's really important, because in what you just said right now, it brought me to the point where the Chinese president, Xi Jinping, said, I want to quote exactly what his statement says, you know, we should act proactively and manage economy globalization as appropriate. Seoul has to release its positive impact and rebalance the process of economy globalization. We should follow the general trend, proceed all prospective national condition, and embark on the right path of integrity into economy globalization with the right pace. And he also further on and says, we should strike a balance between efficiency and equity to ensure that different countries, different social strata, and different groups of people all share in the benefit of economy globalization. The people of all country accept nothing less from us as elected officials, like you just said, and this or the responsibility as a leader of our time that we have. So in saying all of that, you just answer the point that we as a human race has the opportunity to change the course of the global economy in light of this pandemic. It is a time for restructuring and rechanging the shape of what we have now as a global economy.
Yes, yes. Very important what you just quoted. As you know, there's so much noise today, anti-China, or the Chinese are responsible for the Wuhan or the Chinese pandemic or Chinese virus, this kind of name calling, anti-Russia. Oh, Russia, they rigged the election. All this silly stuff. We can all step back and realize, well, these same people that are saying these kind of things now were telling us back in 2001, 2002, 2003, they were telling us that there was weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, and we had to go over and stop Saddam Hussein, and we killed a million people, more than that, horrendous, and what did we do? We did so much damage to ourselves. I mean, obviously, correct. a lot of men and women came home crippled, among other things, physically and mentally. So here are these same people saying now, now it's the Russians. Oh no, and now it's the Chinese. Well, let's hold on a second.
Yeah,
we heard this before.
Correct.
Fool me once, that's one thing. Fool me twice, that's my fault, much less
exactly.
Fool me three times. Exactly. So, and I think President Xi Jinping there is there in that statement, he's saying, okay, well, yes, we can work together on this global stage, but we can respect simultaneously the integrity and the sovereignty of each nation. We can find common ground. We can do this together. Quite different than the globalization, the recent decades, which often took the form of simply resource extraction. Human and mineral resource extraction, from developing countries, a one-way street. And it was said, oh, well, this globalization is going to help everybody. And of course, it only helped a few. So this is why why there's so much venom directed at President Xi Jinping. He's speaking like an American. I mean, Alexander Hamilton or Abraham Lincoln would say, or FDR would say, "Yes, yes, absolutely, I agree with you, sir." So we're really being called back to our better selves, and of course, the China is doing this on the ground in Africa. It's a challenge that means that we got to walk the walk.
Correct. Awesome. And one thing I have noticed also is that what you said, you have, you know, really nailed it on point, because really right now, everybody needs to be responsible. Every nation needs to come together to have an integral globalization in a serious note, not just speaking it, not just putting it on paper, but really to bring it to light. Like a lot of nations, you know, doesn't know that there is Ghana, Algeria, and South Africa has, you know, a space program, you know, and so those space programs, just like the U.S. space program is so huge and everybody knows about it, you know, that will give an opportunity for those space programs that there is in those various countries to expand and grow even more with this new paradigm shift that we are in. What is your opinion on that?
Very important. Yes, very important. Just from the standpoint of satellite technology and the ability to find water, capture the spread, you know, like say of the locust. This is a major problem in Africa right now. We've got a locust swarms again in portions of Africa, East Africa and elsewhere. Satellite technology is already serving a tremendous role, and it's being developed indigenously, so to speak. You know, Egypt, Nigeria, other countries, as you said, Ghana, and so forth. This is, you know, if you will, a space Silk Road. What we could be doing together. You know, you look at, you know, take Texas, just a couple of, you think, oh, well, what are we going to do from Texas? What are we going to do in terms of Ghana or Mali or Sudan or whatever nations you want to talk about, or in Colombia or Peru, we got a lot of oil workers and drilling companies right now that don't have a lot to do because we got more oil in the world than we need. Well, those drillers, those wildcat companies, they could be put to work in Africa drilling water wells.
Correct.
Right? I mean, we've got construction companies like Fluor Corporation based in Dallas-Fort Worth. They do massive, huge projects. Well, let's collaborate to build dams. Energy. We got gas pipelines. Africa has got gas. Underground, gas offshore.
Correct.
We need a lot of gas-fired plants and nuclear plants and so forth. And so out of Texas, we could provide a lot of jobs, a lot of know-how, and we could do a lot of training to make these this knowledge permanently available to these developing countries. And of course, that's what the space program that these countries have launched in conjunction with China and Russia, and to a degree with NASA here, our space program is technology transfer, but one that immediately pays off as well. True. Is paying off already for these countries.
True. And I totally agree with you. And so in light of all of this, Dr. Lentz, do you see that, what it will take to shape the global economy through this recovery process in light of this pandemic?
Yes, I do. I mean, I think this is going over an idea we've already discussed, Dr. Baptiste, but the idea of credit as opposed to borrowing. We knew this back, we were founded as a country based on this idea. Alexander Hamilton's first national bank that he, mm-hmm. as the U.S. Treasury Secretary, he created with the support of President Washington. And then this concept was revived under Lincoln and then under Roosevelt. That's how we got out of the Great Depression in the 1930s. The government mm-hmm. can create credit because mm-hmm. the future, because you and I and others are productive, naturally yes. by our human nature, we're productive. We create more than we consume, given the opportunity. Farmers, skilled workers and so on and so forth, scientists, this is our nature. So we can create credit, we can set in motion, that is, we can make available in the form of currencies, the resource, with credit, we can mm-hmm. set in motion the building of a power plant here, of a highway here, of railroads there, of a mm-hmm. hospital there, not willy-nilly, but with a thoughtful perspective, credits Correct. Can be initiated by a government. Every government needs its own national bank that can generate its own credit. Correct. Great nations Correct. Like the U.S. and China, or the U.S. and Russia, or you can mm-hmm. think of Germany together with Russia or Italy, can combine mm-hmm. to issue credits specifically mm-hmm. to transfer in the form of big projects their capital, their industrial capital, in terms of plant Correct. And equipment and engineering capacity. We don't Correct. Have to go to the banks. We don't have to go to Wall Street or the City of mm-hmm. London or the International Monetary Fund, the IMF, and the World Bank.
Right.
Say, oh, well, no, that's not appropriate to your country. Mm-hmm. We can show you how to sharpen your sticks better, so you can poke those holes in the ground and you can put in seed better than you are now,
Yes.
Or we'll give you a solar panel, to put on your, the roof of your hut so you can mm-hmm. light a light bulb for 6 hours a day, some crazy yeah. thing. That's what's appropriate to you. This is nonsense. Don't forget that. Issue the credit.
That's
effectively,
right.
that's what we're doing. I mean, it's skewed. It's still kind of half one and half of the other. But right now, the monies that we're now generating in the United States, $2 trillion for this, $2 trillion for this. We're sending these checks out. We're making these loans available that are going to be forgiven to small businesses and so on. We're just creating this. We're creating it uh-huh. knowing that this is going to pay for itself, right?
Uh-huh. That's right.
So we're relearning here. We're beginning, uh-huh. If we're thoughtful uh-huh. about it, we're relearning here,
Correct.
How we can willfully create credit,
Correct.
As opposed to waiting for a bank to come along and Correct. Raise money. And that's the Correct. Power that governments, national governments have. That's the power, sovereign national credit, but it embodies the concept of us willfully creating the future. It's a will, uh-huh. a tool that we have to wield willfully, and that's what
Correct.
We have to tell our elected officials and our younger people have to think about becoming elected officials for the purpose of willfully shaping the future.
Correct. And that brings me to another point. Do you foresee that credit will be more technological instead of paper trail, go to the bank and actually receive cash? Do you foresee that in this new paradigm shift in light of this COVID-19 that we will have different type of credit or currency moving forward in the global economy, and that every nation will come together and begin to create credit to get at the infrastructure situation that they have to work, globally together?
Well, there will be a restructuring of financial institutions.
Mm-hmm.
The form that it takes on the level of day-to-day affairs, of going to the grocery store and whatnot, credit cards or cash, that's six of one, a half a dozen of the other. Credit in terms of credit willfully wielded by governments to be expended for infrastructure, healthcare immediately, healthcare projects. This is how it's going to be transformed. I think at least in the interim, the dollar will remain the key global currency, but the ground will be shifted. The dollar will be based on a return to being a productive exporting nation. And therefore the dollar will be worth something, you know, correct, not simply extended because the rest of the world needs the dollar because it's more trustworthy as a haven of refuge than anything else. This is a silly what's been going on recently. But that also means probably a return of the dollar to some kind of gold reserve system and so forth. But it has to be done in conjunction. This is the question of a four powers, bringing the four powers together as the leaders of these four nations, Xi Jinping, President Putin, President Trump, Prime Minister Modi, and others, including Prime Minister Abe of Japan and so on, bringing them together to hash this out. Okay, how are we going to structure a new monetary system, a new Bretton Woods, if you will, that will provide the mechanisms of credit that we now need for technology transfer into the developing world? So they have to work that out. They can come to agreements. They're all tough-minded and wise people. They can come together. They can hash out common ground. That a very important element of that will be this financial restructuring for these purposes that we've been talking about tonight. It has to be.
I agree with you totally. Wow, that brought me into one of our last points. This has really been very, very exciting and informative. And I know that the audience is really enjoying this and they're going to learn a lot from what is going on, because it's not just, COVID one night pandemic and then it's over and we're done. But the mindset of it is for us to come, together as one to implement a new infrastructure that will give the possibility to check and balance for every nation's, not just nation. And so in light of saying that, I would say one of my great philosopher, which I love so much, is Nicholas Kusa. And Nicholas Kusa is, his theory of the coincidence of opposite. It's where the unity of opposition, opposite will create, a new paradigm to get things work that's never worked before. So in saying all of this, I wanted to bring to you that what message do you have for the young people that is in this era, in this century, what are their position, and what can they do in the changing of this new economy, new transition?
Well, I would certainly urge any young person watching this podcast, Dr. Baptiste, to sign up and join our international conference, April 25th and 26th. That's just 2 weeks away. Definitely to tap into a convening of leaders from around the world working on exactly these issues and matters. Who are already engaged. And we have numbers of young people who are getting involved, who are becoming very serious about their own capacity to make a new world around them. So I would say get off the social, the social media. Don't worry how many friends you have on Facebook. you know, that's been used to kind of turn people inward and to tune out the rest of the world. Rather, you know, tune back in, you know, come back into the world. But to change it. Look, I mean, we're going to need thousands of young men and women as new young budding scientists. COVID-19 is just you know, it's just a harbinger. I mean, mankind has to develop mechanisms of healthcare, which means an understanding of nature. We don't know what life is. You know, we have to actually come ever closer to understanding life itself, to ensure its survival, you know, higher forms of life. We don't want viruses taking over. But there's so much here and in the that's available within reach. So I really challenge people to look to the stars, young people to look to the stars. I mean, I'm an old man, you know, and so, you know, I don't know if they'll listen to me or not. Each one has to make up their own mind. But I think the old adage of looking to the stars, looking to the future, and then setting your own path, you know,
This is really amazing, because what you're saying right now, it is a great opportunity for young people to really change the paradigm and really to become a mover and shaker in this era, and really to shape the relationship and shape the elected official way of thinking, really change everything in regard to how we see things and how we view things and how we live in this global society. And so I really like that thought, because they have the opportunity for them to, you know, have the world at their fingertip. And so it's really the time that for them to act and move, because it's the right timing, isn't it?
Yes. And study along the way. You know, it's like a university on wheels. You know, you gotta make the more you get it, you throw yourself into a problem and solving a problem. Like you said, the paradox. You know, the coincidence of opposites. Solving, then that drives you to further study. You know, to increase your knowledge and depth. You know, so that then you can take that knowledge as your own knowledge, your own discovered knowledge, and apply it in a fresh way, and so on. Dr. Baptiste, I really thank you for these podcasts. It's very important what you're doing.
Thank you.
And Kelly, thank you for your efforts and collaboration on this.
Thank you.
But you know that this is. This is very important.
Exactly. And I am very, very excited. And I thank you so much for, you know, being on this podcast with us and really share your thoughts and opinion and share your research of what our global economy needs to look like and what we need to be working on, not to really work in fears, but it's really to, you know, look at this is the now of the pandemic, and this is what it can be after the pandemic if we work in a globalization together to implement a new infrastructure at every level, not just top down, but it's from, you know, top to bottom, bottom to top. So it's vice versa.
So the website again is schellerinstitute.org. Scheller is spelled C-H-I-L-L-E-R, schellerinstitute.org. You know, there's reports that can be purchased there, but much of the material is just available, you know, to use. It's available as free. And of course, we encourage people to consider contributing and so on and so forth. But just go to the website, take advantage of the material, share it. You know, I just look forward to continuing to collaborate, Dr. Baptiste. It's been now a few years that we've been collaborating, I think.
Yes, indeed. We have been working hard, and I know that, you know, our work will definitely have a lot of fruit, especially for the next generation that's coming, because we are setting up this the step and opening up the pathways and opening their creativity to see, you know, and to understand that they have a moral obligation as global citizen to be involved, to be part of what needs to happen in their global community. And so I like to close out with one of the Chinese proverbs that I love so much, especially in light of what we're going through right now, Dr. Lentz, is that victory. It says that victory is ensured when people pull their strength. Success is secured when people put their heads together. So for me, as long that we keep the goal in mind to build a global community and we share a shared future for mankind and work hard hand in hand, we will fulfill the responsibility and overcome every challenges, every difficulties that we would be able to face. And then we will be able to create a better world and deliver a better future for our people to live, not just only now, but also for the future generation till the end of this human race that we know. So in light of all of that, I would like to thank you for the opportunity for being on the podcast. And I would like to ask you if you have any last words you would like to share with the audience before we close out.
Well, Dr. Baptiste, I think we've covered a lot of ground. So I'll just say, everyone stay safe. Take advantage of this time when people are more at home, being social distancing, as they say. Take advantage of this time. This is a great opportunity to study, explore new ideas, and use the time also to outreach to others, to make a difference. But I think this is, again, everyone has an opportunity right now, maybe a little more free time than they're used to, so let's take full advantage of it, turn it to good use.
Yes, definitely. I am so excited and I look forward, you know, for us to continue to collaborate. And then again, you know, I hope that everybody hear everything that you said and know the website of where they need to come and read more of the materials, and then too, for them to remember the conference that you have coming up. Can you please
get a hold of us? They can get a hold of me. I mean, I'm certainly available to talk, you know, through you. I'm certainly available if I can help anyone further in any way.
Awesome. So you hear it first on 360 View with Dr. Marie Asher Baptiste and our wonderful guest, Dr. Lentz. You can follow on our platform, which you guys, I will be sending that to you all through an email blast. And you can follow me on my platform as well, which you will be receiving in my email blast. And I look forward for you guys to continue to support what we are doing and continue to collaborate with us as we look for a better humankind in the future. Thank you. And thank you so much, Dr. Lentz.
Thank you.